And that's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. I was up very late last night covering the Oscars, and as you know, we always give you a little content on the Oscars to supplement whatever you may have felt yourself. So we will start off with just a little bit of Oscar nonsense. After that, we turn our attention to a listener suggestion, the commercial jingle. Why aren't there as many as there used to be? Which ones do we have fond memories of? Which ones can we not get out of our heads? And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I'm a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I stay up late on Oscar night, moving little bits of the website around, and then I cover movies and theater and pop culture and that sort of thing.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Well, we had a long and involved show last week about the Oscars, so we probably have less to say than we otherwise would have. But we thought that it would make sense to cover the telecast at least for a little bit. I don't have a whole lot to say above and beyond what I have already been heard to say loud and clear on the internet. So,
can we just agree that it was terrible and move on to jingles?
Glenn, what did you think of the Oscars?
Well, there isn't much to unpack here. The jokes weren't funny. I mean, that's kind of the end of it. You know, when he started off, when Seth MacFarlane started off the evening, at the very beginning, he came out with some broad, hacky, shticky, Hollywood-type jokes, the kind that Carson would do, the kind that Crystal would do, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I was worried, oh, they've gotten to him. He's been valanched. But then he switched to his normal mode, his shtick, which is meta-offensiveness, right? Which is saying something sexist or racist or whatever. And the joke of it is, I'm saying it, you know that I'm smarter than that, I'm more enlightened than that, so that's the joke. Which doesn't work when you're at a party with a guy doing that, and it didn't work for me on the telecast. What struck me as surprising, though, what I was not prepared for, was how ill at ease I thought he seemed. His timing was off. He was swallowing a lot of his punchlines, he was stepping on his own setups, and then I remembered, oh, okay, stand-up timing is different than sitcom timing. I mean, sure, he's a performer, he's a singer, and he's certainly an actor, but the kind of timing you do on a sitcom, much less an animated sitcom, which if you think about it is constructed entirely in a lab,
right.
You basically have no actual like ensemble performance to cut around when you're editing that thing together. You're basically creating it because they're each speaking at different times, and you can kind of create the timing there. He just seemed a little at sea. I did think that the Shatner thing could have worked if it was 3 to 5 minutes long.
I was going to say it needed to be so much tighter.
Not 15. But in his defense, that is the mistake that everybody who comes onto this show makes, which is 15 minutes. They think they need, it must be plugged into the infrastructure of the show, where they think they need 15 minutes at the top to put their stamp on it. But that is too long. It was too long when Stewart did it. It was too long when Letterman did it. It was too long when anybody comes to the table and does it. We don't need 15 minutes of you, guy.
Yeah.
We need 15 minutes of the show.
I mean, that was right out of the gate, my initial reaction. First of all, the 35 minutes of not even really red carpet. The fact that the primetime broadcast, typically primetime starts at 8 p.m. and earlier on Sunday, but in part because of they want to include the West Coast and whatever, you have not only the red carpet drifting to 8:30, but you have the red carpet kind of winding down because the stars are going inside and sitting down. So at like 8:10, which is a magical high-profile primetime moment, it's sort of the stars are taking their seats. And so the broadcast doesn't really start and kick in, and you know, where Seth MacFarlane is on stage, it's already 8:30, and by the time they got to anything where a trophy was handed out, it was like 9.
And you know, we've talked before about how people who are of the theater are often better at staging award shows because they're live events. Not so much with these theater people who were involved with this particular. Craig Zidane and Neil Maron are people of the theater. They're producers. The producers of the Oscar telecast, and not coincidentally, the producers of the movie Chicago.
Remember Chicago?
Which one big last
remember, remember this song? From Chicago?
But, boy, this thing that was ostensibly an evening themed around the idea of the power of music in the movies used music as poorly as anything I have ever seen in my life.
I think there were exceptions to that. I think Adele worked. I think Shirley Bassey worked.
Sure.
You know, Jennifer Hudson is fine.
But all of those are just...
Barbara Streisand was fine, although I did say that
trifle self-indulgent.
She is merging with her impersonators,
yes,
which tends to happen to people as they get older. It happens to Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, Jack Nicholson, who frankly looked a lot like Danny DeVito last night.
Yeah. But all those things you're talking about there are just pushing a diva out into the center of the stage and shining a spotlight on her. That's kind of the direction that the show
is. I had more in mind the use of incidental music, the terrible decision to use the Jaws theme.
To play people off the stage when talking to
with them. The Jaws theme. But then the music that they would use to walk people on and walk people off, they were choosing these fascinating pieces of iconic movie music and not putting them in any context. Yeah. They weren't attached to the person or the performance or to each other in any real way.
The thing I thought was weird about the Jaws thing was I can understand how in a vacuum you could have thought of the idea of we'll play people off with Jaws and thought it'll be kind of funny and cheeky. Like you would envision like, you know, playing off Christoph Waltz or Anne Hathaway with the Jaws music would be kind of funny. Like
right. When he's thanking his accountant.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. That would be funny. The two people that I heard them do it to the most noticeably were the guy who was in the middle of explaining that the visual effects house that worked on Life of Pi and also apparently worked on the telecast, somebody told me today, is basically like going bankrupt, going belly up. So he was trying to like express sympathy for those people. And that was literally when they cut his mic off. And the other one was the guys who made Searching for Sugar Man, the documentary feature winner. And like when you have people who aren't fancy Hollywood people, that just comes off as like unbelievably jerky.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
As we've talked about before, you can say what you want about the Oscars or the Grammys, but like that's a big moment, especially if you work in an area that doesn't get a ton of attention, like visual effects doesn't make you famous or you make documentaries, you know, that's a big moment. People don't need to act like you're a nuisance.
Yeah. It really does come off that way. And it comes like bullying these people off the stage, especially when there is so much filler in this telecast as it is. I mean, I felt in general that consistently the only part of the telecast where I kind of sat back and enjoyed it was when they decided to list a series of nominees and then pick one of them as the winner, and then that person would come up and get a statue and be really happy.
Yeah.
And I liked a lot of the choices.
There were
for
some
what,
very charming speeches and some nice choices.
Yeah. And I sort of felt like the whole notion of like, blah, well, no one's here to see these people talk.
Right.
I understand when it's, you know, a makeup artist you've never heard of and they're going, I'm not saying this is the case last night, but, you know, let's say somebody who wins that award kind of prattling on and listing their age. I mean, anytime you hear the name of the agent or the accountant, the orchestra, I think, the orchestra reflexively starts playing. But also, and I don't know how much this was by design or luck of the draw, but the fact that they played the Jaws theme for people hadn't heard of, but then subtler themes for your Quentin Tarantino also sort of made it seem like, well, obviously those people will do that. My one other complaint with the Jaws theme, especially the first time they did it, it served to distract the person giving the speech, which caused them to sort of start all over again.
Yeah.
And take longer.
It's
true.
As far as good things from last night go, it was a big night for Vikings. That was good to see, all the Nordic types up there.
The Malfoy family made out really well. Yes.
Except for Thor. Thor wasn't anywhere to be seen last night. He was missing.
Yeah.
And I do think that his smarminess, and he has a certain amount of smarm. I'm talking about Seth MacFarlane now. That oiled the wheels in the show. His oleaginous quality kept the thing moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think coming into this show, my big thing about the Oscars was it was a set of 9 movies, all of which I liked, none of which stuck out to me as like the undeniable best, most great movie ever, but all of which I thought were good, solid movies. And somebody pointed out last night, I apologize if you know who you are, somebody asked the question last night, I think somebody I know on Facebook, when the last time was that out of the 6 awards, the 4 acting awards, Best Picture and Best Director, they went to 6 different movies.
Oh, yeah.
So it's one thing to say they were spreading them around, but like that really is something. And if you throw in the fact that Amour won Best Foreign Film, it's, you know, the two that were left out were essentially Zero Dark Thirty, which I think that does feel like a snub in major categories. Movie. Like that felt like, and it does feel like the politics entered into it there. And Beasts of the Southern Wild, which although it didn't win any major awards, that's the one that was a little movie to begin with. Mm-hmm. Everybody from that movie is going to do just fine. Mm-hmm. And it got lots and lots and lots of mention, especially the mentions of Quentin Tarantino Wallace. So it's like, I'm talking about the better ones.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, I think that in a way, there was a lot to go around as far as different, you know, different awards going different places and different things happening. And when you go in feeling like they're all good movies, none of them seem like they need to blow all the other ones out of the water, and you get some of the more likable people from those movies. Daniel Day-Lewis gives great speeches.
He has lots of practice.
Great speeches. He does have lots of practice, but it was interesting. Our friend Joe Reed had a piece that ran on film.com, which is where he writes about the best Oscar speeches. And he had included a Daniel Day-Lewis speech in the past. And so when he did the one last night, Daniel Day-Lewis had a little bit.
And the Oscar goes to Daniel Day-Lewis.
I really don't know how any of this happened. I do know that I've received so much more than my fair share of good fortune in my life, and I'm so grateful to the Academy for this beautiful honor. It's a strange thing because 3 years ago, before we decided to do a straight swap, I had actually been committed to play Margaret Thatcher. Meryl was Stephen's first choice for Lincoln, and I'd like to see that version.
It was just really charming and effortless, and I saw a couple people who were like, when are they getting their version of that, like, Hope Springs movie? So there was a lot of goodwill. You got a lot of really likable people. Jennifer Lawrence tripping on her way up to the stage and Hugh Jackman trying to help her up. Like, that's rad. Those are nice people.
Thank you. You guys are just standing up because you feel bad that I fell, and that's really embarrassing, but thank you. This is nuts.
You know, I think everybody was happy for most of those people. Ang Lee, got to be happy for Ang Lee, Best Director for Life of Pi, which got several of the technical awards. And
it ended up being the most rewarded movie. It had 4 to a bunch of movies, 3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was really... It's dumb to talk about how much you enjoyed Adele, but she
Not
walked,
dumb, you mean like...
It's, you know, it's like obvious,
redundant.
Right? Yeah. But what I liked about that performance in particular was the just vast confidence of it. But you never had my heart. She walked into this gigantic auditorium, stood in the middle of the stage, didn't look like she had a nerve in her body, and just killed it.
Yeah, I mean, as I said on the live blog last night, she's the singing equivalent of Sully, the hero pilot everyone can agree on.
Right?
I think there's a lot of chance.
Yeah, so in conclusion, I don't think, personally, that Seth MacFarlane was the worst Oscar host ever. The stench of James Franco's dead-eyed stare is still hanging in that building, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon. But, yeah, he could have been better.
I don't know, man. Part of the problem, let's leave aside a lot of the tone of a lot of the jokes, and I'm not a Family Guy person to begin with, so I'm not... I felt like he fed into an overall notion of the show that I couldn't quite shake, which is it felt very small.
Mm-hmm.
And... in a way, the Oscars can't win, because if the Oscars are incredibly dripping with grandeur and grandiosity and people are weeping and rending their garments because they win, which I hate, they get dinged for that. They get dinged for, you know, Hollywood overindulgence.
Don't ask him about Halle Berry.
Yeah, do not get me started on Halle Berry. But then you had the guy, he's got that grin and he's in a tux, and it's, I know it's part of his shtick. I know that it's supposed to be meta commentary and blah, blah, blah. But he just had this kind of hacky MC vibe that made the whole thing seem small. It shrunk the stage every time he talked. And so the Oscars, which usually have that veneer of eventiness and importance, kind of had the Golden Globes felt bigger to me this year.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree with that.
This had the whiff of the Ramada Inn.
It did.
To me, I just was not able to get past, like, kind of what I've been hearing all day. It's like, you don't get it. It's a joke that he does called, "What if I was awful?" To me, that's kind of like somebody being like, if you'll excuse the coarseness of this reference, that's kind of somebody being like, I didn't actually sleep with this other person. I was doing this really funny thing called, what if I had sex with her? And it's like, okay, but that would be bad.
Yep.
If no, you did.
It was a meta commentary.
I just broke your brain.
When it's kind of like, what if I bombed? It's like, well, that'd be bad. I wouldn't want to.
Yeah,
anyway.
I would enjoy that.
Anyway, so I know that many disagree. So feel free to come and find us on Facebook if you choose. Facebook.com/PCHH and talk to us about the Oscars and hopefully Adele and Jennifer Lawrence and other happy things.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing we were going to talk about today, you know, back in the day, if you look at your commercials from the 50s and 60s, they were very fond of, to the point where I would say they regularly had, a jingle, a little song. You can see all of the Dinah Shore singing the Chevrolet.
Sure.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America's asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all.
We talked about Super Bowl ads a few weeks ago, and I'd just like to say, you know, we've recently talked about ads. This is just an earworm war.
Yeah.
I declare an earworm war. Give me a break.
Oh, I
was just going there.
Give me a break. Give me a break. Break me off a piece of that Kit Kat bar.
You do have your candy bar ones, but one of the things that I think is funniest is that, like, what does jingle mean? Like, for example, one of the ones that you'll sometimes hear people talk about is, Buy Menin.
Yeah, that's like, on my list.
Is that a jingle? Is that just a button?
That's a button.
But it's a catchy one, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's a catchy one.
I looked at several lists of, like, the top 10 or the 10 most catchy, and the only jingle that was on each and every one of them, and I looked five different ones. Uh-huh. Does anybody want to take a guess?
It might have been Kit Kat.
Nope. I'm going to say I'd like to teach the world to sing.
Oh,
no.
Oh, wait.
But that's
it's
not a jingle. That's a song.
It's not Chicken Tonight.
Double your pleasure, double your fun.
The lyrics are very simple. Now, is that a tune, a recognizable tune that they've just added the meows to? Did they create that jingle? That's enough.
I'm thinking that's original.
Yeah.
Because it used to have, like, it would have, in addition to the meow, 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 there would be a little
bouncing
thing
ball
at the bottom.
Bouncing cat head, maybe.
Bouncing, I think, I bouncing piece of cat food.
Oh, sure.
I think it was a bouncing piece of cat food.
I choose to remember it as a cat head.
Because it had a thing of, like, I love tuna, liver, chicken. I remember that from when. Yeah.
All right, somebody made a point here, and I'm curious.
That was different, by the way, from Purina Cat Chow.
Ooh, gosh, that's right.
With the little dancing cat.
Yeah,
the cat did the little cha-cha.
Did the cha-cha.
That's doing a little Matrix glitch, actually. Yeah. The cat doing the Matrix glitch.
All right, I want to step back a second.
No one under 40 is getting any of this.
No, it's okay.
Oh, excuse me. People under 40 have YouTube. Look it up.
There's that.
And they spend it looking up cat food commercials.
Well, they should. Now, I said I'd like to teach the world to sing. And was it Trey who said, that's not a jingle.
That's a song.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love.
It is a jingle.
No, it's a jingle.
It's a jingle. It's written for I'd like to buy the world a Coke.
And then they released it as a single.
It's not
but
like
it started
look what
off
they,
as the Coke song.
It's not like when Look What They've Done to My Song Mob became Look What They've Done to My Oatmeal.
Yeah.
It's a
song.
It's
the other way around, I believe.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Right.
I did not know that.
But, I mean, if you think about it, that was written in, what, 1970, 71, 72, somewhere in there? That is not just a song, not just a jingle. That is a mission statement.
Yeah.
And they have done it. They have sold the entire world colored sugar water. So, mission accomplished, Coke.
They have bought the world a Coke.
They have bought the world many millions of Cokes.
All right. So, different kinds of jingles. You've got your, what was it?
Buy Menin.
Yeah.
And you've got your meow, meow. I mean, what information is meow, 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 meow imparting? Now,
well, it's imparting I love tuna, liver, chicken.
Well, it can. And it also, it does have part of the name of the product in
right.
it.
Mm-hmm.
But here's sort of to me, the mission of the jingle, and we talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Super Bowl ads,
mm-hmm.
is does the jingle get across the name
right.
of the product? Here's an example. Here was a jingle that stuck out at me. And one of the first things I thought of when when I thought of jingles, which is
588-2300-EMPIRE.
Now think about that. They got a phone number into their... Now, of course, what does Empire sell? Anybody answer me?
Carpet.
No, carpets.
Very, do they?
Okay, because I had to look. I had to look it up.
It's carpet. I had no idea. Yeah,
it's got a big picture, a big cartoon of a guy who looks like Stan Lee rolling on a carpet.
Yes, it does. Yeah. It does look like Stan Lee. But your jingles that are able to get
incorporate some kind of contact information.
I mean, if you can get contact information, that is impressive. But the name of the product and some sort of positive association.
Save big money at the Knots.
There you go.
Wow. Hey, Ben. Ouch.
Well, the Oscar
Mayer. Well, ouch to you, too.
as opposed to my fantastic voice. Right. The Oscar Mayer jingle.
My baloney has a first name. It's.
Not only got across, you know, Oscar Mayer has a way of B-O-L-O-G-N-A, it taught people how to spell baloney.
Right?
That's a
right?
That's an
educational service.
You talk about a mission
statement.
And
how to spell Oscar and Mayer.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's true. And it could be M-E-Y-E-R, but you know it's M-A-Y-E-R.
Sure. Baloney is one of those confusing words.
I'm sure Oscar Mayer wiener.
Okay.
Oscar Mayer has a hell of a jingle writing team somewhere.
Do you remember the Peter Paul Mounds?
Well, they're all dead now.
Do you remember the Peter Paul Mounds jingle, which only would advertise Mounds and Almond Joy during peanut specials? You remember this?
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. Almond Joy's got nuts, Mounds don't.
I associate it with peanut specials. I also remember it because there was a shower scene. It comes by very quickly. Sort of impressed itself in my young mind.
Meant everything to Glenn.
Yep. Stuck on Band-Aid and Band-Aid stuck on me. That's one.
I am stuck on Band-Aid brand because Band-Aid stuck on me.
I'm stuck on Band-Aid brand.
There was a variation. That's right.
They had to add branding. It for like stuck on Band-Aid TM. All rights reserved and Band-Aid stuck on
me. The most recent example of this that I could really think about was the Chili's baby back ribs.
Yes.
I want my baby back. Baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back. I want my baby back.
Chili's baby back ribs.
I want my baby.
Chili's baby back ribs.
Barbecue sauce.
Other than that, they were going the way of the dodo these days.
They are. And what I was thinking about, one of the things I was thinking about is that the most similar recent Coke ad with the feel to me of the old I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing was the one that they began running, and I think they started running it during American Idol. I was originally going to say I thought it was a Super Bowl ad, but I actually think they might have debuted it during American Idol. With the woman walking down the street who's singing the Nina Simone, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free.
I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish I...
When I first heard it, I thought, that's really nice. That's a really, actually very nice rendition of that song. And it's the same sort of upbeat. You know, she loves the world. She's walking down the street handing people Cokes because she's a dealer.
As one does.
Of this kind of Coke.
A flavored sugar one.
And what it made me think about was what killed the jingle, which is at least in part the shift toward using pop songs.
Yes. Yeah.
To the point where they are almost like jingles. That one that they use for the cheese.
I woke up.
It's a pop song, but it is now I think as the theme from Cheese. It's for the cheeses that have cream cheese in them. It's for the shredded cheddar and stuff like that has cream cheese in it. But I don't know whose it is. Of course. It's probably Kraft. Maybe. But I just think of that. And it's very easy to get your song in a position where people may just think of your song as the theme from that commercial because it's not a jingle, but it kind of is a jingle.
Well, you know, first of all, a recommendation for those who have not heard it. Has anybody at this table heard Ween do Where'd the Cheese Go?
Where'd the cheese go?
I don't know.
This was Ween, the band Ween, you know, Push the Little Daisies, was commissioned to write a jingle to go with, I believe it was Pizza Hut's pizza where they baked cheese into the crust. And it's fantastically, unbelievably, wonderfully catchy. Mm-hmm. And it was somehow rejected. Mm-hmm. And so Ween actually circulated and, you know, gave away a free MP3 of the song, including an incredibly profane B-side. Mm-hmm. These are not hard to find. Ween, Where'd the Cheese Go is key. But, you know, that jingle was killed. It never happened. And, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, and the question is, if you had to write a jingle, would you try to write a really good jingle? Like one that people would love, like, let's say, the Oscar Mayer one. Mm-hmm. Or would you rather write Chicken Tonight? Like, who would remember Chicken Tonight now, mm-hmm. if not for the terrible Chicken Tonight song?
I feel like chicken tonight, like chicken tonight.
We're all walking. Well, so you're about to say we're all walking the fine line between informative and annoying, but then I realized that, you know.
So the transition seems to be around 1987. I got this from the website HowStuffWorks.com, and they're a wonderful site, and they have a wonderful podcast, several wonderful podcasts. So according to them, in 1987, Nike licensed the Beatles song "Revolution," and all of a sudden, jingles started to seem kind of hokey. Kind of old-fashioned.
The question is there anybody other than like local stores that still uses them? Because certainly Menards still uses theirs, I believe. If they've retired it since I left, then the world has gone.
Yeah, then to hell
bonkers.
With the world.
And the Empire that you were talking about, local retail still uses it.
Right.
The question is, do national brands still use it?
Especially, well, I think Empire is a national brand, actually, but it just has that grainy VHS,
it does.
UHF.
Well,
Empire,
I would put Empire and Menards as sort of regional.
Regional, yeah.
Okay. Well, I would also then say one jingle that always bugs me because it has a very mellifluous opening sound and then it just pulls the rug out from under you is
have a good night's sleep on us, mattress discounters.
You see, it's very, very light and flowing, and each of those words in the lyric have only one syllable, so you're kind of being put to bed, and then they kind of end it with mattress discounter, which is
mattress discounter.
It's just rushing through it. You take this leisurely. Yeah.
It's like they said how long the jingle has to be, and they used all of it in the first part.
Right.
And
yep.
then I was just like, well, you have to get the name of the company in there somewhere.
If you were in the Washington, D.C. area, then you will be familiar with the jingle for a particular carpet cleaning and repair service. Just one call to Joe Hadid. If you stand on it, we stand behind it.
That's dumb.
I'm wondering whether Glenn might know this one, because I think that this was a Philadelphia thing or else an East Coast thing when I was growing up, is the girl who did the "I'm a lucky girl, hooray, oh boy, look at my diamond, it came from Bandiscoy, my boyfriend bought it, saved lots of money too." Glenn has no idea what I'm talking about.
Nope.
Yes, that's very good for you, because she was it was somewhere on the East Coast that she was from, because otherwise she would not have that voice.
Well, let me ask you a question, Linda Holmes.
Yeah.
Do you have a passion for fashion? Do you have a craving for saving? Are you going to take the wheel of your automobile and swing on down to
Ideal?
There you go.
Oh, wow.
If you remember that one, that introduces it with, it's really little more than a Quonset hut, but then these girls sing, but, like that. And they sing, hey, you've got a passion.
So,
for
so we're just doing our favorite
I know,
favorite
this isn't really
now.
So much a show as a list of songs.
Has anybody sung the Alka-Seltzer song?
Oscars made me really
plop,
tired.
Plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is.
There, we've filled that we filled that obligation. But Glenn, you're saying that long about 25 years ago, there was a big shift to popular songs. Now, keep in mind, there are certainly popular songs. I immediately think of Walking on the Sun by Smash Mouth. Has the line,
"So don't delay.
Now supplies are running out." Which basically they wrote a car commercial, turned it into a hit, and then turned that hit into a car commercial.
Yep. The same essay that Glenn was citing earlier points out that, you know, it used to be musicians didn't want their work associated with something as crass as advertising. And then round about that time, music companies, labels, artists decided they needed more money.
Well, it's part of an artist's, a musician's ability to make a living.
Right.
You know, there are fewer and fewer channels to add up to above poverty level living for a musician. So if you get your song in an ad, I mean, I think that's certainly part of it. I mean, you know, we've talked, I'm sure, on the show before about the fact that commercials are a big part of where you discover new artists. Right. And I will say that part of the reason I find Ho Hey by the Lumineers so irksome is that it was in this Bing commercial that I kept saying. And that is a very jingly song.
I've been trying to do it right. I've been living a lonely life. I've been sleeping here instead. I've been sleeping in my bed. Sleeping in my bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
well, also, and another intentionally jingly song is the Mentos theme.
It doesn't matter what comes, fresh goes better in life. With Mentos fresh and full of life, nothing gets to you. Staying fresh, staying cool. With Mentos fresh and full of life.
That came after the whole transition in 87, you know, with the people adopting pop songs. And that was a defiantly retro thing. And that entire approach, that entire
look.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, those were made to look like they were made in 1982.
Exactly.
I mean, and they continued to be that way through the 90s.
Yeah.
Stephen was talking about music discovery, and the big example of a company that's really sort of seized on that as a strategy is, of course, Apple, with, you know, moving its, not just iTunes, but moving hardware as well.
Strange world, hoping I could learn a bit about how to give and take.
I would say at this point, Microsoft and Amazon, I mean, Amazon has you know, for a while, was certainly appropriating these very little quirky little 30-second jingle
bits. I think Amazon was using some women.
I think in general that they're
women are the big readers, you know.
Well, in lieu of jingles, you have, so we need something twee.
I noticed that some of the imagery that went with some of these jingles, particularly the gum ones, were very, very weirdly sexual. The Double Mint Twins was always sort of had this weird thing going on. And this, the lyrics to Juicy Fruit. Let's take a, let's take a minute. Take a sniff, pull it out. The taste is going to move you. You see the rest. I mean, that was always, like it's like written for 14-year-olds. To titter over.
And me.
Oh, and Linda.
14-year-olds and people who were up way too late.
And remember the Sunkist commercial? Now, they didn't use a jingle. They used Good Vibrations, the Beach Boys' Good Vibrations. Yep. But all the imagery was of just incredibly tan, muscular,
And I first knew, blonde people. I think I first knew Good Vibrations as a as an orange juice commercial.
My God.
Wow.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
no,
I'm conflating.
No, I think I probably did.
We've sort of touched on the fact that this goes back into old radio to the point where among my memories of listening to old Jack Benny radio shows as a kid, you know, as much as any sketch is sort of, you know, if you want better taste from your cigarette, Lucky Strike is the brand to get. I mean, I, and I remember like which cigarettes are toasted based on old radio shows that I listened
which
to as a kid.
Which cigarettes are toasted?
LS, MFT. Lucky Strike means fine tobacco.
So. Well, again, if you want to guess, you Trey Graham, you did the homework. So what was the first jingle according to HowStuffWorks.com? What
do you think? I saw this.
Ooh, I do not remember.
Is it old? Was it an... No.
We're like talking 1926.
Yeah.
Don't
know.
Wheaties.
Oh, yes.
Wheaties.
Yes.
On Christmas Eve. People say that Come Away With Me, Lucille, and My Merry Oldsmobile was the first, but actually that was exactly what you were pointing out earlier. Mm. It was originally a song that Oldsmobile then later adopted.
Yeah. See, this is the part where I skimmed the reading.
Yeah. Clearly.
Yeah. Well, I think that you should come and find us on Facebook or on the blog, and you should tell us your favorite jingles. Yeah,
just do basically what we did.
Just like, do what we
remember
did.
Remember Roto-Rooter? Remember that one?
Roto-Rooter, that's the name.
Anyway,
you know what? I can't remember. Anyway, it sure troubles
I'm not
down
sure
the drain.
I'm not sure Trey's a better singer than Linda.
Yeah, I think Trey is.
I never claimed to be.
I don't think Trey knows any of these. I think he's making the whole thing up. But I'm looking forward to hearing everyone's rendition of the touch, the feel of cotton,
ugh,
the fabric of our lives, since we've decided that twee actresses sing that now. At any rate, come and find us. Talk to us about jingles. You know, it's a loosey-goosey week here at Pop Culture Happy Hour. We're a little punchy. We welcome you to be a little punchy as well. And that brings us to our final segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Because believe it or not, this entire show so far has not just been us talking about what's making us happy this week. Stephen Thompson, what else is making you happy this
besides
week?
Where'd the Cheese Go by Ween, which I'm going to pull out and listen to as soon as we are done with the show. You know, I have been, like several people at this table, I have been in the soup for the last few days, weeks, months, between the Oscars and preparing for South by Southwest. Wow. I've been looking for palate cleansers, and I think the closest thing I've found and something that I've gone back to...
Lemon
sherbet. And the YouTube videos of people remixing Taylor Swift's I Knew You Were Trouble with the sound of screaming goats. If you have not heard, some of them are clumsier than others. You gotta wade through a few videos. You gotta be a connoisseur of Taylor Swift and screaming goats. And it's so stupid.
This isn't palate cleansing. This is you're losing your marbles.
This is your mind.
Well, it's greased the skids for that. I have watched Taylor Swift remixed with screaming goats several times today, and between that and the Oscars,
Tapped out.
I'm just about tapped out, but I would like to say this show does air on my beautiful daughter's 9th birthday.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
I would like to wish my dear daughter a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Ladybug. Trey Graham, what is making you happy this week?
I'm just going to tell you right now, this is all about the Zaxxon Rule. I am made happy by the fact that the Oscars are over and that I am not having to prepare for South by Southwest. I am made happy by the fact that as we record, it is my birthday and I have plans with a friend afterwards.
Happy birthday.
And it is also my sister's birthday tomorrow, and I am going down to Florida to hang with the nephews and the rest of my family. So I'm sorry, I got nothing beyond that except that I'm done with the Oscars and I am having a vacation.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
We're all just songs aplenty.
We're just done singing. But yeah, I think the end of awards season in general is... That is a
sentiment that I hope all of you in the audience can share.
Yeah. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
Okay, this is going to sound like a thing that would be making Trey Graham happy, but it's mine because A, I got layers, and B, well, you'll see when I get to it, an interview with Patti LuPone. Star of stage and screen, help me out here, Graham. Vita... Anything goes.
Most recently, the broadcast of Company with Neil Patrick Harris.
Sure. Corky's mom.
I was going to say, life goes on.
Corky's mom. She was on this last week's episode of Here's the Thing, the Alec Baldwin podcast/radio show. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I like Here's the Thing. Baldwin tends not to get out of his own way, if that makes any sense. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. He really wants it not to be so much an interview as a discussion. And when he's got a good rapport going with the person, that works very nicely. Sometimes it doesn't. He does have this weird, very macho male thing of like, if he's interviewing a woman, he kind of wants the listener to know whether or not he wants to bone her.
Yeah.
Like, there's this weird macho thing going on there. So he had Patti LuPone and Alec Baldwin in the same room. So the self-regard in that studio was pungent, was heady, was exuding through the earbuds.
Yeah.
But I'd never heard her interviewed before, and she's talking about her Juilliard acting training. Mm-hmm. It was weird, Graham. She kind of threw musical theater under the bus a couple times because, of course, she's classically trained.
Sure, yes.
And she does this weird thing with her elocution, very actorly elocution, where she's, what a good opportunity. She hits every T like that. It's a little bit weird.
It was a big, brave year for us as actors.
Exactly.
Dear.
But the thing, I was
a little Mr. Show.
I was listening to this in the grocery store, and the thing that made me drop my tangelos was this one line, this one thing that Alec Baldwin says to Patti LuPone. He says to her, "Why do you care so much?" It was like, oh, it's the grossest thing ever. Oh, my God, I went fetal. Went fetal right there in the produce aisle. Why do you care so much?
Well, if you're going to ask it of any actor, Patti LuPone is the one you want to ask.
So that's what,
she will tell you.
That's what's making me happy/cringing.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. I might have to listen to that. what is making me happy this week? Here in my notes, the first thing listed is absolutely nothing.
Oh, dear.
But after that, fortunately, I did remember something that really did make me happy this week by the traditional definition, which is Mark Harris is a writer who previously wrote a book called Pictures at a Revolution, which is about the five Best Picture nominees the year that it was Bonnie and Clyde and Dr. Doolittle and In the Heat of the Night and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
And one other
67?
One. 67? I'm not going to remember the year. I remember the films. But anyway, Pictures at a Revolution, it's called. It's a really, really good book. And he wrote a piece this week in GQ about the new leading man, the new improved leading man. And normally, things dissecting movie stars are about the least interesting thing, particularly movie stars as movie stars, are about the least interesting thing that you can find for me. But I'm going to read you a little bit of what he wrote here. When he's talking about what he calls Plan B, which is actually, as he points out, the name of Brad Pitt's production company, because that's how important it is. Actors who are interested in curating their stardom over the long haul have to do it with one foot in the system and one foot outside it, because we as moviegoers crave a kind of genuineness and individuality, or at least a simulacrum of it, that isn't consonant with being a willing corporate tool whose career is to be shaped by paycheck gigs and studio needs. This is what Shia LaBeouf was moaning about when he recently said, "If I could give the money back and get all the credibility that I'm seeking, I would do it tomorrow in a heartbeat." A George Clooney who made only neo-Rat Pack movies would look like a lazy underachiever despite the film's success, but a George Clooney who makes those movies in order to gain the power to traffic in the serious, the small scale and the adult, up in the air, the Descendants, etc., looks like the master of his own fate and a shrewd player, a man who knows how to navigate the realms of both commerce and art. What he's talking about here is something that has been written about quite a bit, but I think he gets to the heart of it in a way that people often don't. And I think he also, there's a wonderful sequence where he talks about how every actor has basically an ideal decade in which that's the ideal decade to watch them. That with Tom Cruise, it was at, you know, his ideal moment for him to be a movie star. And talks about how Clooney was so lucky because it was farther along after he was, among other things, a better actor, was his ideal movie star point as well. Around like he pegs it around Michael Clayton.
Sure.
So it's just this really, really intelligent and thoughtful piece about male movie stardom. And what I like about it, there was at least one person on Twitter who said to me, you know, why couldn't he talk about women? And when you write a thing and you say, my thing is now going to be about people and it's all about men, then I have a thing with you.
Right.
But if you say, I want to talk about male movie stars and what happens with male movie stars and what masculinity means in Hollywood and movie stardom, I have no problem with that. And I actually, as I was reading the piece, there kept being these moments when he would use the words male movie star. And I would think, I just love you, because I love that when that's what you're talking about, that's what you say.
Right.
And you don't just say movie star and mean male movie stars. So to me, it's actually also a really, really intelligent piece in terms of gender politics, even though that's, I don't think that's at all the primary thought. So again, it's in GQ. We will link to it. Mark Harris in GQ. If you were to Google Mark Harris, new and improved leading men, you would find it. And he's a terrific writer. I enjoy him a lot. That's what's making me happy this week.
Lovely.
That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-D-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker, as you would have heard in his own jingle at one point in our history. You can follow
Trey, didn't we?
You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our producer, Jess Gittner, at Jess Gittner, G-I-T-N-E-R. You can follow our esteemed producer, Emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you're tapping your foot to right now. I don't know about the rest of you, but I intend to go home and collapse. I appreciate, in the meantime, that all of you came in today.
You bet.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.